Hi, this is Savannah.
And this is Brian from the Dorky Diva Show.
And you're listening to Star Wars,
the best place for below average Star Wars.
In a world where people need 80s and 90s movie reviews, two regular Geordies combine forces to bring you the Brother to Brother 80s and 90s Movie Review Podcast. Check them out on Twitter, YouTube, and all decent podcast vendors.
Hello there, and welcome to the Star Wars Show, the best place for below average Star Wars. I am the Jordy Jedi Pete.
And I'm Jason Hondo Ling.
And I'm Kat Reese-Yauka.
And we are here back to talk more Book of Boba Fett. We are going to be reviewing Chapter 3, which is the third episode of Season 1, The Streets of Mos Espa. It was written by Jon Favreau and directed by Robert Rodriguez. And it aired on January 12th of this year, 2022. So if you have not seen Chapter 3, The Streets of Mos Espa yet, pause this episode right now, go watch it, and then come back and listen. Otherwise, you're probably going to have some of it spoiled for you. Because, as you know, we love to deep dive, we love to get sweaty, and we're going to be talking a lot about all the little details of this episode. First up, Jason, this is probably one of the shortest episodes of the season so far. So if we didn't really get a chance to sort of catch our breath, did we? It was just sort of a constant drumbeat going through the episode. Although it was a shorter one, it certainly wasn't a slow one.
It was absolutely amazing. And I have to take my hat off to Robert Rodriguez and Jon Favreau, because I think they're timing these episodes perfectly. I know there was criticism the first episode for an opener was short, but then what they brought to the game with the second episode, I think, more than made up for that. And now this third episode progressed the story along so well, and I think we're now at the centre, almost at the centre point of the story, which is obviously where we're supposed to be. And this, I think we can already see the plot lines forming, but there's still plenty of surprises to come.
Yeah, let's go to you, Kat. Obviously, you know, sort of this was the third episode. It's only a 7-episode season, so, you know, we are sort of at the midpoint between this episode and the next one. This is sort of the mid-season of the season. You know, other shows have a mid-season finale. Obviously, this one won't, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, this sort of is the mid-season. What were your thoughts sort of overall of the where we are now and sort of the things that this episode did to set us up for the next part and the final part of the series?
I think as a middle beat to this story, it did exactly what it needed to do. Any book will have that sort of central part where you tie up the past to open up the future. And I thought that's what this episode did. The flashback we see explained so much about where Boba Fett is right now in his personal circumstances, and then that's now sort of a closed storyline. So we're now in the present, but we get that sort of closure then from the huts, and that then opens up what the future episodes will be. We now know who sort of the big players are going to be, who's going to be going to sort of this syndicate war with Boba Fett. So I think the pacing of this story was just so well done. It was fast, but it did everything in a way that didn't feel fast. For a episode that's less than 40 minutes, it did feel a lot longer, just because it did so much within that time period.
Definitely. Let's sort of dive into the episode itself. You know, we begin the episode with a watermonger, Lothar Peel, comes to Jabba's palace, or now Fett's palace, asking for help. There's a gang of cyborgs essentially stealing his water in Mos Espa. Mentions a bit about how sort of no one in Mos Espa respects Boba Fett and things like that. This guy seems a bit scummy, to be honest with you, on the surface. I wasn't really a big fan of him. Boba ends up, you know, they go into town. They actually find the gang who is stealing the water. It's quite some interesting comments here made where, you know, they talk about, you know, when he finds the gang, the stylish cyborg gang, and he asks them, he's like, oh, well, if the water wasn't priced at a month's wages, they didn't charge it, was it a week's wages?
No, it was a month's wages for a week's worth of water.
That's the one, yeah. So, you know, then we wouldn't need to steal it. So it's sort of a bit about, you know, the guys who are priced people at the market, maybe. Although my argument would be, if you can afford all those tasty cyborg arms and eyes and fresh chrome paint on your speeders, then maybe you should spend that on water first. That's probably maybe diving a bit too deep into it. But no, obviously, you know, they claim they haven't got any work, even though they're from the workers area of Mos Espa. Fett offers them work, he settles their debt. Although, you know, Fett being the sort of the kingpin here, sort of like, you know, I'm going to give you 500 credits. Even though it was like 1300 is what the man said he owed. Fett also instructs the water dealer to sort of reduce his prices. And, you know, we're sort of off to the races as soon as the scene's done. You know, Fett's now got a gang sort of working for him. What were your guys' thoughts on sort of all this opening of the episode? We'll go to you first, Jason, please.
I absolutely loved it because it showed Fett now, I think, finding his feet as this kingpin and starting to show his, you know, what he is and who he is. Obviously, he's been told he's got to earn the respect of the people on the street, which is pretty much what he's doing at this point of the episode. And it's also, I've heard a lot of seen criticism and heard people say, oh my God, why have we got these bright, sparkly bikes in Star Wars? And I actually thought it was a lot of fun. And it just showed almost that, you know, Star Wars, because obviously everything has always been dirty and grimy and that, it almost showed a point that actually even Tatooine's starting to move forward. Maybe the bright lights of Coruscant are starting to come through to the city, you know, to Tatooine. So for me, I thought that was quite a nice juxtaposition for how the episode was going. And obviously, you know, you've now got this young gang, without saying too much, who later on in the episode certainly prove themselves to be worthy of Boba's support.
Kat, what were your thoughts on seeing there was a shiny speeders for the first time?
Again, I completely agree with Jason. I absolutely love them. They reminded me a bit sort of a Vespa meets some of the British bikes. There was this sort of 80s punk vibe to them. And I think it really worked because I think fans need to remember that George Lucas gave us basically a 50s style diner in Attack of the Clones. So to have like an 80s style biker gang to me feels very natural in Star Wars. As for the bright colours, it reminded me a lot of the droid mission in season 5 of The Clone Wars called Secret Weapon, where the sort of that little general has to take a group of droids to infiltrate the separatists. And those droids were all rainbow coloured. And I think having those colours, it makes them so visually distinct on Tatooine, and it really makes them stand out. Plus then when Boba Fett, you know, he hires them because they say there is no jobs available. And I think having that, you know, you've got the older protagonists then hiring these young bikers, there's sort of a, you know, a beautiful moral message there of, yeah, just because you're different ages and you've got different priorities doesn't mean you can't work together. Boba Fett is daimyo. He's getting on a bit more, but he's happy to have these kids working for him. So I think having those different generations coming together is a really powerful message. And it's a powerful message to send to the people of Tatooine, and particularly of Mos Espa. He's hired these youngsters, and, you know, he's bringing you know, jobs to people of Tatooine, you know, and then he tells the watermonger to reduce his prices. I said in the last episode we did that he needs to win over the everyday people of Mos Espa, and that's exactly what he's starting to do in this episode. And it'd be really, I think, important to see now is if he continues to do that, if he continues to bring together the people of Mos Espa.
Yeah, definitely. I think I also thought it was a bit of a test. So, you know, when they were saying, oh, well, there's no work, you know, they had answers for everything he was saying, but it's a bit like, oh, these just sort of wisecracking kids coming up with excuses. But when he goes, come work for me, and they're like, okay, that's when he's a bit like, well, you know, you said there was no work, I'll just give you some. So, like, are you going to say yes or are you going to say no? Because if you say no, you're probably lying. But the fact that they come with him, work with him, he's like, well, I've solved your problem, so or he's going to get better, and then they do. So it was a really good sort of test of their character. I think he was testing them out with that offer of work, which was really good. Again, I think the speed of bikes, I think obviously it was a bit, you know, of sort of 80s looking. They are very shiny, almost very prequel-esque from planets like, you know, Coruscant or Naboo, that type of sort of flash, lots of cash society. That's the only reason I'm a bit like, can these people really not afford water when, you know, clearly got a brand new cyber arm and a fresh coat of chrome on the speeder? You know, get your priorities right. But, you know, other than that, like, I didn't really mind the look of them that much. I think, you know, this water merchant is obviously being able to get away with a lot in the past, you know, with dealing with Bib Fortuna. Obviously, you know, if he's charging more for the water, Bib Fortuna can probably get a higher cut from the water, if that makes sense. So even though it's pricing all the sort of the working class folk out of being able to live their lives, those two don't care because they're getting richer. You could almost say it's very much like Tory Britain right now. But sort of the biker gang, I suppose, you know, sort of come with him. And then that's sort of when we go into our sort of first flashback back to tank scene. Just before we talk about that, when the water merchant first goes to Boba to speak about the people stealing his water, and he mentions that the people who sort of use droid pots to make them into better killers, which is obviously, you know, they're just a group of street kids, really, you know, sort of like steampunk kids. But when he first said that, my first thought was, if I remember correctly, there's like, I think it might be in the Rogue One visual dictionary, where there's people on Jedha who are like kidnapping people and taking their brains out and making them into like half droid, half human slaves type thing. So I thought, oh, it's going to be like these dangerous people, but it's actually not. Nothing to do with that. Or also made us think of that creature that is in The Rise of Skywalker, who they're pretty much telling you is Dengar, but not telling you is Dengar, if you guys know what I mean.
Hang on. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's there's so many clues to different things, and it's difficult to see what they're tying in and what they're not tying in.
I quite like how the water merchant described them. He says, half machine, half man, which really sort of links back to Obi-Wan's line about Vader being more machine than man.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, and these guys were very far from that, weren't they?
I think he's definitely trying to make them sound more dangerous than they really are. But he is very sketchy. He's sketchy from the start. I mean, he tells Boba Fett to rid him of this scourge. who on earth uses the word scourge these days?
Yes, indeed. He's definitely hamming it up quite a bit.
I'd try to remember the name of the actor, because I've seen him in other stuff where he's played very similar characters. So it's almost as soon as he turned up, I was like, oh yeah, this guy's dodgy.
Yeah. So going into the back, that scene, you know, we see Boba leaving the, you know, we first see our first sort of, again, every sort of back, that flashback starts with something on Kamino. You know, we see Boba sort of seeing Jango flying off planet on Slave One.
Can I quickly interrupt here, because I have to say, I thought that was a beautifully shot scene and so poignant, showing the sort of relationship Boba had with Jango when we first met him in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, and it's also painting the picture, maybe, you know, when Jango was there, yeah, very loving, but it's also like a bit of an absent father type feel. We haven't really seen any of these flashbacks Boba actually with his dad, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the main thing we saw obviously was that first shot where he's the most famous shot, obviously he's picking up the helmet, so we're instantly brought to his loss. But now I think we're being shown that he had a loss before he even lost Jango.
So, you know, we come to see, you know, after we see Jango flying away on Slave One, then takes us into the sort of the Tusken Raider era of Boba Fett. And we see him sort of nods to the Tuskens as he rides off to go to Mos Eisley to meet with the Pikes to pick up the cash they've arranged for the protection deal that happened in the last episode. Gets to Mos Eisley. Very different vibes from Mos Eisley to Mos Espa, I've noticed in this show. One's almost like a derelict cesspit, while the other one's, you know, a lot more vibrant and colourful, although both desert. We see him meet the Pikes. The Pikes leader says, you know, but you're only going to pay one group protection money, and we've already paid one so far. So, you know, essentially insinuating you need to go and sort out this disagreement between you and the, I can't remember the name. Does anyone know the name of the speeder bike gang who have been killing the moisture farmers and killing the Tuskens?
I think they literally just refer to them as the biker gang, don't they?
They are given a name. It's something like the Spictos gang. I can't quite remember. They're the Nyctos, they are. It's quite unusual, and because of the way he says it underneath like the pike mask, it's a bit hard to pick up.
Yep. So this is a different gang to the one we've been discussing in the earlier part of the episode. You know, Fett sort of nods, we'll sort that out, don't worry, and essentially sets off to go back and tell the Tuskens, you know, we're going to have to go and find this rival gang, take them out, and then we'll earn the protection money. But upon arriving back at the camp, it's been set on fire. It's very sort of picturesque and the same feel as when Luke arrives back at the moisture farm in A New Hope, and it's on fire, and then it zooms in on the burned skeletons of Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen. Here he gets back. All the structures have been burned down. There's dead Tusken bodies lying around. And there's even a shot of the chief sort of lying on the floor. Quite sad. We then see Boba sort of burning the bodies. And then we see him putting the Gaddafi sticks on the fire. And then the last one he puts on, he gets it from anything, is the small little stick that the youngling Tusken, who he's built such a bond with, used as his. So we know they're all dead, including the little child. And it was quite sort of, I almost feel like we didn't get a lot of time to digest it. We were sort of there in and out, but I thought the moments were there, it was very deep and hard hitting, especially when you put the small stick in the fire. That's when it really hit me, sort of just how serious this was. So it was sort of the shortest flashback that sequence we've had in the series so far, Kat, what were your thoughts on sort of the entire flashback scene?
Oh my gosh, this entire flashback sequence broke me. I actually think that the Pikes, when they pay the protection money to the Nyctos Riders, I think they probably told them to take out the Tuskens, because they're just, it feels all like a setup. And that would explain then Boba's need to bring order to Tatooine and to get rid of the Pikes. It's personal for him. I mean, when he comes back to find the camp destroyed, it is utterly heartbreaking. In Attack of the Clones, you know, when Anakin destroys the Tuskens, I think most people and fans thought it was justified because of what they'd done. But these Tuskens, we've seen them. We've seen that they've got a community. They've got families. They've been humanized. So to see that total destruction is just so heartbreaking. An absolute massive kudos to the cinematography of David Hein and Paul Heumann, because it felt quite like scenes from War Horse for me, because to keep it PG-12, you see very little of the bodies, but then you have this pyre scene where Boba Fett is putting on the gaffy sticks, and that's when you can interpret what has happened. And when he puts a child's gaffy stick on the pyre, that wrecked me. And Temuera's acting in that scene had me in tears, because you could feel the emotion, and paired then with that very almost like sort of religious chanting. It felt like, you know, monks chanting that music. It literally is so haunting, and even after watching the episode several times, it still haunts me.
Jason, sort of, what were your thoughts on the entire sort of back that flashback sequence in this week's episode?
Yeah, for me, it was a very beautiful story. I've just took the time, I've just checked out, it's the Kintan Striders, the biker gang, and as Kat said, they're the Nyctos. And the way we saw this story pulled out with the Pikes, you know, I love the Pikes from what they've been in previously. Obviously, I know I've said this so many times, but the more this is going on, I'm thinking we're not just going to see the Pikes go to war with Boba Fett. There's going to be more coming out of the woodwork, and that's why I'm convinced this is heading towards Crimson Dawn, and obviously bringing that back from the Solo movie. But yeah, the whole setup, first the way Boba sort of rode into Mos Eisley, you know, and went into the Pikes. Everything was very calm. You know, the whole meeting was very calm. And then, you know, when he left, you knew he was going back to the Tuskens. Well, I thought it was going two ways. He was going back to the Tuskens and saying, we need to sort out these bikers. Or he was just going to go straight after them on his own. Which obviously then we went back and I thought, oh, you know, as soon as I saw the deaths, what had happened to the camp straight away, like you say, one, it took you back to what had happened to Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. Also, it to me harked back to what had happened with Anakin and when he killed the Tusken Raiders. But this time, like you say, they were innocents, and it was heart-wrenching stuff. Temuera Morrison, the more I see of this guy, the more I think he is an amazing actor, and he's been wasted for so long. The fact that he's now got this lead role, I think, is brilliant. And, you know, seeing him with the different gaffy staffs, laying them out on the pyre and that, again, that to me harked back to obviously Luke when he did the Pie of Darth Vader or Anakin. There's so many similarities all the way through, but at the same time, it brings more heart to the story, I think. And then obviously, you know, it was gearing up now, you know, next week. That's not the end of the flashbacks. There's no way that he's not going to go after those bikers now. And the fact that you saw him remember, you know, seeing the symbol that they'd etched, and he saw that then at the camp, so he knew for certain it was them that had done it. So I definitely think there's going to be a bit of revenge seeked after this, or retribution, I should say, not revenge. I just think, for me, some people say flashbacks, oh, there's too many, but they're holding the story together, and they're telling the story of how Boba has got to be in this character that we're now seeing as the crime lord of Mos Espa. So, for me, it was brilliant flashback.
Yeah, I think I'll tie into this point at the end, but like, there's another reason why these flashbacks are important, and I think they're very much, the flashbacks tie into what's happening in the modern day storytelling. Yeah. It's very sort of poetic. Star Wars is like poetry, as George said, which I'll tie into when we get there. For me as well, I think, you know, this relationship that Boba's built with the Tuskens, I think, you know, he's quite clearly watching Mandalorian when he comes to Tatooine. And obviously, Mandalorian works with the Tuskens to kill the Krayt Dragon. And he's obviously watching that, because that's how he knows Mando's there. And that's how he tracks Mando off-world to get his armor back. I think that's one of the reasons why he probably doesn't mind helping Mando, because he sees Mando working with the Tuskens, and they trusted Mando then. And obviously, he has a bond with the Tuskens. So, you know, maybe that's something that goes in Mando's favor, rather than Boba just killing Mando and taking the armor. Was just a quick thought I had. We then brought back into sort of the modern day world very quick with the battle tank gets opened, but you know, the water floods out, so it's sort of an unusual opening. And before you know it, the Black Wookiee is there, just attacking Boba Fett. They have this really sort of physical fight. At one point, Boba Fett tries to take the Wookiee down with a sort of a single leg takedown, which does not go very well at all. Part of me thinks, why didn't the Wookiee just like open the door and shoot him? Would have been all over very quickly, rather than sort of this sneaking in and attacking. But also this fight endures. Boba gets, you know, holds his own quite a bit, defends himself quite a bit, but eventually gets sort of, you know, thrown to the side. But before the Wookiee can finish the job, Boba's new employees, shall we call them, the sort of the cyborg gang, come to his aid, help him, and then they end up fighting the Wookiee in the main chamber. And obviously, something that seems to happen a lot in this series is that they activate the Rancor chamber, and the Wookiee sort of falls down into the chamber. Kat, let's go to you. Sort of, what was your thoughts on how the Bacta sequence ended and straight in this action scene, and what were your thoughts on the action scene and sort of how the events took place?
It was quite a jump scare, because we go from this very mellow, very heart-wrenching flashback to straight to this action that comes totally out of the blue. I mean, even though the twins warn Boba Fett to sleep lightly, it still comes as a shock. And then Black Kersatan just grabs Boba Fett out of that Bacta tank, and you know it's bad, because Boba Fett's not expecting it. He's not armored, and Black Kersatan has fought in gladiator pits, which I think could be why he doesn't bother just shooting Boba Fett. I don't think that's really his style. It's not really his style much in the comics either. Black Kersatan is very much a physical fighter. You'll notice when he's fighting, he's actually got electrocuted knuckle rings. And that's sort of much more his style. And that's actually what the fight felt like. It felt more like a brawl than a fight. I think it was a good action sequence, although perhaps at times it did feel a bit slow. Everybody was sort of waiting for a turn to try and bring him down. And I really wish it had been a bit longer. I mean, you know, Black Krosatan is this massive, powerful Wookiee. And it almost felt like he was overpowered a little too easily, even though he takes a chunk out of one of the Gamorrean guards on his way down. But I think, you know, we see that, you know, Boba Fett was vulnerable, but those kids, those biker kids, came straight in to protect him, even though that's not what he hired them for. So I think that was a good test of loyalty for the biker kids to Boba Fett. And while perhaps it wasn't, you know, as long as it could have been, it did show that Boba Fett's bringing together sort of a crime family that he can rely on and is working well. Plus Fennec just taking a dagger out of her rifle just to get Black Krosatan into the pit was a very cool move.
Yeah, I thought, you know, because he's hanging on by one hand, like, he's a very strong, he can probably pull himself up with one hand. So she's very much like, let's not take the chance. I'm going to throw this dagger into his hand and make sure he falls down. Because if he gets out of there, it's going to be big, big problems.
Yeah, and I love how then he's sort of in the pit, sort of, you know, roaring in anger. And I was like, you know, you could just leave him in there instead of the Rancor, because I think Black Krosatan could probably do a lot more damage. I mean, we know Wookiees can rip people's arms off.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. I think another thing for me was that obviously Jabba's Palace, as I mentioned last episode, it's very empty. There's probably plenty of different entrances to sneak into. And usually when the palace is full and Jabba was there, you probably couldn't sneak past many people because it was full. But obviously because it's very empty, it's literally got two Gamorreans, a droid, Fennec Boba, and now these young mod kids in there. It's still very empty, so the Wookiee was able to sneak in and get to him. And that's one of the problems with having this such a big premises that's just so empty with people. Jason, what was your thought sort of on all this?
Yeah, I'm going to sort of almost not disagree with Kat, but I sort of understood what was going on with why the fight felt slow. Obviously, we started off very fast, very intense, and I'll be honest, you know, you felt like, oh my God, Boba's in real trouble here. And then when the gang came in, I think, to me, the fact that they were all like taking their turns to try fighting Black Krosatan was almost like a pack hunting. It reminded me straight away like Jurassic Park, where they say about the velociraptors, where each one goes in testing weaknesses, and they're actually, although it feels slow and labored, they're actually being very strategic and trying to find his weakness so that then they can all pounce and take him down. Obviously, it doesn't work because they don't find the weakness. The Gamorrean guards come in, and again, this just goes to show the Gamorrean guards, you know, complete loyalty to Boba. And then obviously they're took out pretty quickly by Black Krosatan. And again, then he's cornered. And you can see the pack instinct, and you can almost see in his eyes, he's thinking, okay, they've sussed me out now. Now I need to take a step back, and I need to work out what they're going to do next. And obviously Fennec's come in, and she's timed it perfectly because she knows where the trap door is. So keep everyone back, and bang goes the trap door. So to me, it was almost hunting. It wasn't so much a fight. It was they came together. You know, these kid bikers have clearly been working together for quite a while. They've got a relationship. They're almost like a tribe. And that, to me, was what was going on here more than it being slow. It was actually more thought out than you even think as it's happening. And I think the way... when I saw him down in the pit after he'd been captured, it just reminded me so much of when we're introduced to Chewbacca in Solo, where obviously Han's chucked in. Like you say, they could quite easily have just left him down there. And they wouldn't need a Rancor down there because they've got this fiery Chewbacca, or this fiery Wookiee, who will literally rip to shreds anything that's thrown at him. But no, for me, the whole sequence just made a lot of sense, showing the tribal side of this group. And again, you know, without spoiling it later on, when we see the chase, they work very well as a team. And I think that is what they were trying to show partly in this scene.
Yeah. So sort of moving on from here, you know, we see sort of Boba trying to figure out what to do next. You know, it's obvious that the twins, the two Hutts, have sent Kuristan after him. He's sort of like, let's wait for the Hutts to make the first move. Fennec and the droid are a bit like, that's not. Before they can make a decision, the twins have arrived. They bring a gift, apparently, so they've already made the move. And then we get a very interesting sort of conversation, and it's very weird to see these two Hutts acting the way they're acting. Kat, what were your initial thoughts on this?
Well, initially when the twins arrive, you think that basically they're plotting more. I mean, they must have realised that Black Kersatan's assassination attempt has failed, so they've come with some other plot or another threat, some way to get Boba Fett out of Jabba's palace. And then they start apologising. And that's like, that really threw me, because I was like, Huts don't apologise, ever. And yeah, then they say that they had all been lied to, that another syndicate was coming. So there's sort of, you know, these breadcrumbs being thrown out of, well, there's somebody more powerful than the Huts, and something's got the twins rankled enough that they're willing to give up Tatooine. So that clearly states, you know, how much of a threat the twins think this other syndicate is. Now, if you think back to the original trilogy and to the Clone Wars, we know that the Huts were an exceptionally powerful syndicate. Very few people crossed them. So ever since that power vacuum from Jabba's death, they must have lost an extraordinary amount of power for them to be afraid of a different syndicate. So that was a very interesting conversation between Boba Fett and the twins, because it shows how the crime underworld has changed since Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I think also the twins sort of say it's bad for business to get in a crime war over Tatooine, and I think like how much resource would that take out of the Hutt plans to do that? And like if these pikes have been in cahoots with, you know, the other crime syndicate have been brought in by the mayor and been promised all along, they're probably a lot better prepared because they knew they were coming to take it, if that makes sense. So I think it says a lot about that side of it.
Definitely. I mean, it shows that the Hutts now are pretty weak as a crime syndicate if they can't muster the resources to try and take Tatooine, so they're just going to step back. They clearly want to keep the resources that they've still got to protect Nal Hatta. So they've lost a lot of power, and they're not going to try a risky gamble with the pikes.
Yeah, and also I wonder how much money Tatooine actually generates now, because we're not seeing a lot of going on this planet. Like, do you know what I mean? So maybe it's not worth the bloodshed either.
From what the sort of biker kids say, that there's no work. Mos Eisley looks very quiet in The Mandalorian. So it looks like it's just sort of moisture farming now. You know, I think slavery doesn't seem to be as part of Tatooine as it was. We haven't really seen any slaves in Mos Espa. And there's been no mentions of the pod races still continuing.
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting if we learn about sort of what Tatooine and what Mos Espa actually generates cash-wise for these syndicates in the future. Why do these people want it? The Hutts also bring a gift, a parting gift, for Boba. in the form of a Rancor and a Rancor Keeper. You could say the Rancor Keeper is just as important as the Rancor here.
Oh, he is. He's so important.
Jason, what were your thoughts on the Rancor arriving and what happened?
It had to happen with Robert Rodriguez because I don't think there's anything he's done that Danny Trejo hasn't turned up in. And this guy, for me, he's a fantastic underrated actor. He just lights up whatever he does. And I thought he was perfect for the Rancor Keeper. And the way he, you know, he's done it before in some of his roles where he's played this character. As soon as you look at him, there's been loads of comments online, you know, the scary Rancor wasn't half as scary as the look of the Rancor Keeper. Because he is a real, he's just got this grizzled face that's lived a life. And then the scene where he's telling Boba about, you know, how loyal and how the Rancors build a relationship and all this. To me, he seemed to come across so sincere. And like the scene where Boba eventually walks away from the Rancor and he turns to the Rancor and goes, "Don't worry, he'll be back." And I just loved this scene through and through. The introduction of the Rancor was brilliant because obviously, yes, now it's almost like this crime syndicate's coming back. And it's almost like the Hutts are saying, okay, with everything that's going on, we know the Pikes and whatever else is coming at you. But I actually think they're almost thinking, there's no way we can fight this off. But there's a chance that Boba Fett could. So maybe if we give him some of the tools of what being a crime lord is, which in their mind is having this creature to throw people to, then they're thinking, okay, we'll step back, let him deal with the mess, and then maybe we can come in and sort it out afterwards. So I think that was part of their plan with giving this gift to Rancor. You know, obviously they thought, well, the first thing we could do is take Boba Fett out ourselves. And if we've took him out, we can reclaim Jabba's palace. And I think pretty much they just assumed then that all the other syndicates would be like, oh, well, it's back under the control of the Hutts. But because obviously he didn't win, but he outsmarted Black Kersantan, it was then, okay, maybe it's time for us to take a step back. And that is the whole thing with the Hutts. The Hutts are these great crime lords, but it's not because they go out picking fights all the time and everything. They're planners, they're plotters. And that, to me, that's my thinking as to why they're just saying, okay, you can have Tatooine, we're going back to Nau Hutta.
Well, remember, they don't tell him he can have it. They advise him to leave as well, actually. I think they've obviously just learned as well about the Pikes coming. So I think it's like, you know, these Pikes have been promised this all along. They're very well prepared and they're coming. We just thought we'd have to come here and take care of, you know, whoever was running the show, whether it was Bib Fortuna or whoever I've killed them, which is Boba Fett. So I think, you know, they've had to rethink their plans heavily. And you know, they've advised Boba to sort of get off planet as well, you know, with the Pikes coming. But it's up to him what he does, I suppose. You also tell me you can keep Coruscant as well, now he can sell him back to the gladiators and make some money. But Boba decides not to do that. He says, no, we'll set him free. The Wookiee looks sort of a bit confused, and Boba says, look, no hard feelings, mate, it's only business. Word of advice as a bounty hunter, try not to work for sort of people you don't agree with. And sort of, there's sort of a little bit of agreement in the way he looks at him.
Yeah.
And then he sort of runs off a bit like Harry and the Hendersons. That's what I thought. Like a big abominable snowman sort of running away.
Yeah.
Which made me chuckle a little bit. I don't know if it meant to come across that way or not, but that's how it looked. Reminded me of Harry the Hendersons. But yeah, we sort of almost got Boba. Then, you know, he's learned the mayor sort of not told anybody the truth of what's actually going on. So straight away, it's like, let's go get the mayor. they get down to the mayor's office. The mayor's not in. They should go get in the room and sort of the Twi'lek sort of counselor for the mayor's on the run in a speeder. And that's when we see sort of the mod gang sort of come to help Boba. You know, they sort of chase him down. Cardigan, you mentioned before about them working as a team during this sequence. Just talk us through your thoughts on this whole sort of chase sequence through Mos Espa.
Actually, before I go into the chase sequence, there's some lore about the Rancor I want to talk about quickly. Is that okay?
Yeah, go for it. Yep.
Because I know everybody's going to be excited about the Rancor. I think it's quite important to mention that when Danny Trejo is talking about the Rancor, he mentions that they were ridden by the witches of Dathomir. And this is a very important tie-in to a Legends book called The Courtship of Princess Leia, in which the witches of Dathomir were Rancor riders, and Rancors in this book were very much sort of like dogs meet elephants, in the fact that they had the loyalty of dogs and the brains. They were very smart, but they lived in herds like elephants and were led by matriarch Rancors. So I think seeing that Legends lore come into the canon now is a really big deal, and I think it just shows how much depth and research Jon Favreau and Robert Rodriguez have been putting into the Book of Boba Fett. So I just quickly wanted to geek out about the Rancor and all that lore, because I was yelling at the screen when all that happened.
But am I right in thinking, Kat, as well, that was one of the books written by Dave Wolverton?
It was, and very sadly, he passed away this week.
Yeah, that it's not one I've read, but I know when I sort of read all the details, when you said about it, I thought, I know I've seen that book somewhere.
Yeah, so if you sort of want to support Dave Wolverton, even though he's passed, definitely give the book a read, because it's a great book. Even though it's not canon anymore, it's still a great story. Han is Han in it. He actually manages to win a planet, but it's led by this the witches of Dathomir are completely totally feminists. He gets locked up. Leia has to save him. Lots of things happen in between. Not to mention Luke. Luke is one of the witches of Dathomir. Basically, wants to take him as her slave husband. So it's a complete. There's some completely very unexpected and quite funny scenes in there. So it's a very good read. Highly recommend it.
I think for me as well, one thing that did come up, which I forgot to mention, is that Boba hears that story. One of the key points is that Boba doesn't want to go into town on a litter. And I think he's having thoughts here, because he actually, after hearing the story, he does ask the Rancor keeper, Danny Trejo. He says, I want a train to ride him. And I think Boba's having thoughts, you know what, I don't need a litter. I'm just going to start riding into town on my Rancor.
I mean, what a way to send a message.
That's his big idea, I think. And that's going to be his litter, riding into town on a Rancor.
Not to mention, when he says he's ridden beasts 10 times this size, did you immediately think that he was referring to that animated creature from the holiday special?
Yeah.
Is that the Mythosaur,
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's the vibes that I got as well.
So many little Easter eggs.
Yep. So, Kat, what were your thoughts on the speeder bike, on the chase sequence of trying to track down the mayor's assistant?
Oh, I loved the speeder bike chase. I mean, we haven't had sort of many speeder bike chases sort of since Return of the Jedi. Not that this one is as fast paced, but it's still got a lot going on. You don't really expect the Major Domo to be able to drive like that. He's so sort of quiet and unassuming, but then he trashes half of Mos Espa. And the amount of Easter eggs in that chase scene, you've got all these different droids and aliens from across the prequel and original trilogies. The pacing of it felt really good. You've got the bikes, you know, going through the narrow streets of Mos Espa while the Majordomo is in a much larger speeder. that feels a lot like Luke's speeder, but a bit more of an advanced model. And he's just throwing it around Mos Espa. He's trashing so much as he goes. I mean, he's not much of a man of the people. But then we sort of see then the punkiness of the rider gang, because they've got, because of their cybernetic parts, you know, they've got all these tools to try and take him down, flamethrowers, and things like that. So it's very different. It still feels Star Wars, but there's some sort of very different elements to it. And that final moment where he crashes into those Mayluurons felt like something out of Back to the Future. Plus, obviously, Mayluurons we've seen in Star Wars Rebels, Season 1, the Hera's favourite fruit. So that was quite a nice tie-in as well.
Yeah, I thought this entire sequence reminded me of Back to the Future. Sort of the chase sequence in number one and number two. I thought all of it reminded me of that. You know, which, you know, has connections back to Lucas, I suppose, produced by Spielberg, although directed by Robert Zemeckis. So yeah, I definitely had Back to the Future vibes for this entire chase sequence. Then we learn at the end that, I like when, you know, they finally catch him and then Boba sort of jetpacks down from the sky. Yeah. And sort of he's like, asks him a question. He says it's been promised to the Pikes. And that's when I think, you know, all this is tying in, you know, Boba lost all those Tuskens and he was very upset because of the Pikes. And then now here the Pikes have come to town. So, you know, we learn that, you know, one of the mod bikers is spying on the transport station on Mos Espa. There's a lot of Pikes turn up and he calls Boba, lets him know. And, you know, Boba says that here, and look, they're ready for war. And Boba says, we'll be ready to meet them type of thing. We're going to go to war with them. I'm not leaving. And I think the reason why he's not leaving is because he wants revenge on the Pikes or what they did, the Tusken Raiders.
Do you wonder, though, because obviously with the Pikes now turning up again in bigger numbers, are we maybe going to see in the flashbacks at some point Boba's forced the Pikes off of Tatooine? And this is them coming back to reclaim what they feel they've lost.
I don't think they really, like, they don't run Tatooine. Like, they come and run that train. They run the spice, but, like, you know, they've got that small little house, like, not house, but that small room in Mos Eisley, which is, you know, for better, want of a better term, a shithole. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it's like they're not really that powerful. So I think, like, but now with Jabba being gone, they've obviously been talking to the mayor a lot. And, you know, they've decided, they made a deal with him where, you know, we're going to come in and be the crime syndicate who runs the show. Not cutting protection deals with other people, because guess what? We will be the protection.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So I think that's where we're going with it.
Yeah, definitely. There's an Easter egg I've just suddenly remembered that I meant to mention when we were talking about the flashback sequence. I loved the fact that as he was walking through Mos Eisley, as he was walking towards where the Pikes were, in the background you saw Pele Motto walking along with her little droids. So it almost set you in, like, okay, we're in the time frame now of where the Mandalorian was when he came to Mos Eisley for the first time.
All right, I didn't notice that. So it was Pele Motto with the pit droids, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. She is literally, as he's walking along, you suddenly see her in the background, just walking along behind.
Yeah, you can recognise her just with the perm.
Yeah, exactly.
What were your thoughts on this sort of speeder bike chase through Mos Espa?
I loved it. It was a bit of action. It brought the episode to a really fitting close, I think. It, again, like I say, it showed teamwork, and also now this biker gang's loyalty to Boba Fett, because, okay, he turned up, he could have acted the big kingpin, you're doing as I'm told, as you're told, and yet he turned around and said, okay, come work for me. And, you know, he's offered them something that no one else has offered them. So I really liked it. The the Majordomo driving through, the speed of chase from his point of view just seemed almost farcical. It was like when he went through the two guys or the two droids carrying the Jabba the Hutt portrait, that was quite comical for me. And then obviously, as we say, he crashes into a load of Mailurons, which obviously are a big thing from Star Wars Rebels, so you've got that tied in. So yeah, I loved it, the way it all tied it in. And then obviously he was pretty quick to say, okay, yeah, the mayor's jumped ship, and he's joined the Pikes. And it just set up this whole thing perfectly. And then seeing them come off the starship sort of thing, it did make me chuckle with some of the cheesy lines, like when Boba Fett says, oh, can you keep an eye on things? And then he said, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say that. And then he says, yeah, that's okay, I've spent a lot of money on this eye. And then I think Fennec Shand says something like, oh, I see. And it was just like, oh my God, someone sat there coming up with all the eye jokes they can come up with at one point. But it's quite interesting. I've just read, there's something, because Boba Fett's doing quite a lot of speaking. And I've just read an article that's gone up on Jedi News of an interview that Tamora Morrison's done with NME. And apparently he spent the entire time trying to pass his lines off to Ming-Na Wen. And he even tried going behind Jon Favreau's back and getting Boba Fett's lines cut so that he wasn't talking so much.
Why was he doing that for?
Apparently he felt that Boba Fett shouldn't be, and it's something that even the fans have said, that obviously Boba Fett has always been a bit like the Mando, this silent sort of character. So he felt, you know, like where necessary, he felt that he needed Ming-Na Wen to take over the lines so that he could just be this brooding figure behind her. But apparently Jon Favreau wasn't having any of that. It says what he actually tried to do is, whilst Jon Favreau was away, whilst they were shooting, he was off in Atlanta. So Tamora Morrison spoke to one of the staff writers and said to him, look, can we just cut these lines for the shoot tomorrow? And they got to set the next day. And Tamora Morrison, before they started filming, got a call to the set, and they said, we got Jon Favreau on the phone for you. And Jon Favreau said, look, just read the lines. We'll cut them out later if necessary. So he very much was keeping an eye on everything all the way through.
I can understand, though, why Jon Favreau has written Boba Fett with more lines, though, because, I mean, when Boba Fett was a lone bounty hunter, it makes sense for him to have this mystique. He doesn't need to talk. He's a bounty hunter. Very yeah. much like Din Djarin, in that he's working by himself, for himself. But now he's leading a family. You know, he's trying to be the Daimyo of Tatooine. He has to communicate. He needs to communicate with his people to get things done, to plan things out, and to rule successfully. So he does, I think it shows this progression of his character, in that he's gone from this loner to a head of a family. So I think his more lines just sort of are a progression of that journey as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I think for me, it's a case of, you know, in Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, you haven't paid your money to see Boba Fett. But this is called The Book of Boba Fett. So,
yeah,
guess what, Boba Fett? You're going to have to talk, man. Otherwise, you're going to like it. And, you know, so it's either, you know, fans can have it both ways. You either keep him as a sort of minor character where you can have your own headcanons about him, or you can get this awesome TV series, but guess what? He's going to have to speak. Because for me, I think he hasn't said anything out of line, I don't think. He doesn't talk that much. I think he talks when he has to. And obviously, you know, he's trying to rule with respect, so he's doing a lot of listening, I find. Likes listening to people, and then he will respond. He doesn't sort of cut people off, if that makes sense. You know, like when these people come to his palace, you know, he's like, you know, Fennec's almost like, get them out, and he's like, no, let them speak, let them, I'm going to listen to them, I want to hear what they have to say, whether I agree with it or whether I don't.
I think it's weird that
he would be sort of doing that behind the scenes. It's a bit like, you've got to sort of trust the creative process, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's partly as well. Tamora Morrison's very much a rebel, and he likes to do things his own way. And I think this just goes to show that Jon Favreau's very much got his stamp on what's going on. And I have to admit, when you think about what has happened so far with The Mandalorian, you know, with everything that's come out from Star Wars since Disney took over, their major success has been allowing Jon Favreau to take control and bring about The Mandalorian. From the way the story's told, I think a lot of it is Tamora Morrison being, and if you've seen the videos of what he was like in other stuff that he's done, he's a very mischievous guy. And tries to play the game. And I think that's more of what's happened here.
And I think you have to watch out. You know, people who didn't play the game were Phil Lord and Chris Miller. People who didn't play the game were Colin Trevorrow. Guess what?
Definitely.
Fired, mate. That's what happens. Like...
Definitely. But I think it's safe to say with Tamora Morrison, at the moment, as long as it keeps going as it is, I'm pretty sure he's going to turn up in the Ahsoka series, and I'm pretty sure he's going to turn up in the Obi-Wan series as different characters.
Yeah. Let's hope so. Let's hope he doesn't burn the bridges, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Definitely. So sort of, Kat, let's go to you. Sort of, you know, this episode sets us up, sort of, the Pikes are arriving, the Pikes are preparing. Boba needs to prepare a lot more by the looks of it, comes from what he's got at his disposal right now, but looks like we're going to war over Tatooine, over Mos Espa. What were your thoughts about how this episode A, tied in with the previous two, and then B, sort of sets us up for what's to come in the last half of the season?
I think it tied in with the previous two really well, because it sort of brought the flashbacks full circle, and we understand now why Boba Fett wants to be daimyo. It's not just because he wants to, it's a personal reason. He wants to bring law and order to Mos Espa because of what happened to the Tuskens. So he realizes that outliers like the Nyctos riders are a danger to the native people. So because we have that flashback here, we understand now why he wants to be daimyo. And so that personal reason gives him, I think, he deserves to be daimyo more, because he's actually doing it for good reasons. He doesn't just want to be a mob boss for the money or for the power alone. He actually wants to do good with it and see good done through it. And then, of course, when those pikes come in the finale, it feels, it's just this mob vibe. They're all in black. You can imagine that they've probably got hidden weapons. It feels very dramatic. And then Fennec says they're going to war. You know, she just, you know, because Fennec just says it as it is, doesn't bother wrapping it up. And I think that's going to be, now I think the premise for the next episode is, well, if the Pikes are here for war, Boba Fett has to respond. He can't wait for the Pikes to make the first move. That's happened previously. We've seen that with the Tuskens, and we saw how tragically that ended. So Boba Fett now has to make a move. So whether he's going to go out onto the streets to try and win over more people, he's got proof that he can do it with his cyberpunk gang. And I think the Rancor is probably going to play a bigger role than we realise, because if he does learn to ride it, well, that Rancor is capable of some good amount of destruction, and it would really send a message to the Pikes if he was riding that, you know, look at my strength, I've tamed a rancor. So that's I think that's definitely going to have to come into play. And will we see Boba Fett now really acting like a crime boss? Will we see him trying to broker deals with maybe another syndicate who hates the Pikes, or with the perhaps, you know, some of the more powerful people on Tatooine to try and get rid of the Pikes? Because obviously we know, because of his personal vendetta against the Pikes, it's either them or him. They're not going to coexist. He's got to get them off Tatooine.
Definitely. Yeah. Jason, do you think Boba is going to hire Black Coruscant to come help him?
I have a feeling that that's going to come back into the story. I just wanted to say something about the end of that episode as well, because I've just literally seen the artwork from that episode come up, and just having a quick look. And for me, there was one thing that I did feel with that episode when the Pikes were coming off of the ship. To me, it looked just like a group of Pikes have arrived on a cruise ship, you know, and they've arrived on the planet. The artwork shows more of, there's a central leader and he's flanked by like five or six on either side of these Pike, almost like soldiers. To me, that didn't carry across in the scene. And I think that if that had carried across in the scene, because if I remember rightly, there was also other passengers from other races, so they almost just felt like a group of passengers. I think I would have been more scared if I'd seen them coming off the ship like the image from the artwork. But yeah, Black Coruscant, I definitely think is going to play a part. I think Danny Trejo and the Rancor definitely are going to play a bigger part. I think that's the introduction of another loyal helper to Boba's cause. And it'll be interesting to see who else he gets, you know, because I think we discussed it in earlier episodes, obviously before this episode, where we thought it was going to be Boba and the Tuskens. Well, obviously, the Tuskens have been took out of the equation. So who else is he going to get to call upon to come and help?
Kat, what's your thoughts on sort of where we're going next and what the war could possibly look like between the Pike Syndicate and the Boba Fett Syndicate?
It's interesting what Jason said there about the Pikes, because I sort of read that scene differently. I thought this is just the first wave of Pikes. These are just like the, you know, they're on the lowest rung of the syndicate, in that they're just sort of like the dog sent out to scout the area and get some safe houses and sort of just get the mob set up there. I don't think we've seen like the syndicate leader for Tatooine yet. I think he's going to come later when the Pikes have sort of settled something ready for them. So I think we're going to probably see the Pike leader for Tatooine come in, because I don't think he was part of that first wave. I think we're going to see more Pikes coming in. Then who Boba Fett calls upon to help try and get rid of the Pikes is going to be key. It'll be interesting to see, although his Tusken tribe is destroyed, because he was accepted by one tribe, does he still hold a standing with the other tribes? Could he call on them to come and help, maybe?
Yeah, that could be interesting.
Yeah, so would he sort of like bring the Tuskens together as one big tribe rather than all these separate ones? And we hear from the droid at the start of the episode mentioning that the districts of Mos Espa are split between the Aqualish, the
Trandoshans.
Yeah, Trandoshans. And what was the third one?
I'm trying to think.
Oh my gosh. Well, the third alien species, the one that tries to mug Baby Yoda off Din Djarin in The Mandalorian. Will he broker deals with them maybe to try and get their support? We know about Trandoshans in particular, you know, Bosk, you know, they're very good fighters. So they would be powerful allies for Boba Fett. Whether he would call upon bounty hunters like Black Kersatan, other people he's worked with like Dengar or IG-88, I don't know. So it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with the Pikes setting up for war, because we're now going to have to see a bit of diplomacy from Boba Fett.
Do you think there's a chance he puts a call out with Din Djarin himself, the Mandalorian?
I can't see that happening, because if you bring Din Djarin in, it goes from being the Book of Boba Fett to being the Mandalorian all over again. And I think, you know, Boba's got to fight this fight. It's personal to him. It's him who has to win. So I think to bring Din Djarin in was sort of murk up the waters, because it's not Din Djarin's story.
I agree with you 100%, but I just think marketing-wise, the MCU works. You go to see Ant-Man because it fits into the MCU, not because it's Ant-Man, if that makes sense.
I saw Ant-Man because it was Ant-Man.
Yeah, but I think the general movie doing public, they were like, you know, you go to see it for that next bit of the next nugget that ties into the next one and the next one, if that makes sense.
But they could bring in, you know, they've already brought in Black Kersatan, who comes from the comics. So it could be that we're going to see another surprise character who we know perhaps well from the literature to come and help Boba Fett. Not Din Djarin, but somebody with the fan base behind them. That's entirely possible.
Could be. Jason, any last thoughts about the episode?
I just loved it. I'm hoping, and I have a feeling that because we're about to hit what in effect is the central episode, I'm hoping it's going to be a slightly longer episode, and we're going to get maybe see this full thing developing. Although, when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking for pacing wise, it might not be necessary for the episodes to be much more than 40 minutes each as we go in and then finish with a big episode. So, yeah, we'll see. There's so much each week now. There's one thing with this series. I'm looking forward to it each week because I've got loads of ideas where I think it could go. But each week it surprised me with where it goes, and I'm not disappointed in the surprises. I'm not thinking, oh, well, that was a bit predictable. There's something for everyone, I think, every week so far. So hats off to them.
Kat, I've got a question for you. I've just had a thought that's popped in my head. Obviously, they've hinted at, you know, they've made very clear, you know, very certain dialogue in regards to the Rancor. Imagine if it's like the Pikes take control of Jabba's palace and then like send Boba down to get eaten by the Rancor.
Oh, that would be quite the twist.
They'll be laughing though, thinking it's going to happen, but obviously because of they've said the Rancor sort of bonds with who it sees first, so it's, you know, it's seen Boba loves it, and the Rancor seems to love Boba. I think that's only going to grow as the next episodes go. So maybe they send him down to his demise, but actually, it's actually their demise because, you know, it's going to help them.
That would actually sort of really be really cool, because it would sort of show, you know, the bond between master and animal. I mean, Boba Fett was totally mushy with that Rancor. I mean, he goes into his mushy voice. He's stroking the Rancor. And he says, what are we going to call you? And, you know, you can see that they're going to have a great relationship. I think the Rancor is going to be like a really big dog to Boba. So, yeah, you know, if the Rancor could sort of tear free from captivity. And that's another thing. I mean, Click doesn't like being in that cage. I mean, Danny Trejo's character says it's depressed being down there. So I mean, will Boba Fett keep it down there, knowing that the Rancor isn't particularly happy? So if the Rancor, you know, escaped free to take down the Pikes, that would, it's not just sort of escaping captivity, it's showing that it's more than a beast to be kept in a cage. It can't be caged.
Yeah. Well, that just sort of be where it's housed, but actually it comes out quite a bit and it gets fed quite a lot. And it's not just waiting down there forever to be fed people who make Boba angry, essentially. I've got a question for you, Jason. Obviously, we've seen some, you know, when the Back the Tanks flashbacks all start with Kamino. You know, we've hinted today when we're speaking about how sort of even when Jango was alive, was he sort of a lack of a father figure with the way he was always off-world? And if you think about who Boba has as family, what during his time on Kamino, do you think we'll get a Torn Wee cameo?
No, I don't think we will. And it's, I think it's very much centre. The shots that we've seen so far of like Kamino, and obviously, I'm trying to think now, where does the fight and Attack of the Clones happen?
Geonosis,
that's the one I was looking for. They're very much taken from and centred on scenes with Daniel Logan. And I think they're just keeping those scenes just right, because obviously they've had to use another actor or a bit of digital magic, because obviously Daniel Logan's a lot older now. So I don't think we're going to see any more of necessarily the characters other than a young Boba Fett. But I do... It's funny you say, like you said, he didn't really have any father figures, apart from when you think back to the likes of Cad Bane, when he sort of was working with all of the bounty hunters and that. It depends, because obviously we've got, what, another 4 episodes. There's plenty of flashbacks to show more of Boba Fett's life, so... Could we get a few fan-pleasing moments?
Could it also be now that because of the lack of Jango in his life, that Boba Fett feels that he kind of needs, as the head of the family, to be a good father figure to everybody? So he sort of feels that pressure.
Yeah, I think that is almost what they're painting with that. You know, we are seeing, because it's like he said, all the dreams have come back. And the dreams of his youth. And like we say, I think it's pretty clear that it has been showing his lack of a father and his feeling of being alone. And I think that's another thing that's juxtapositioned by the point that up until that point that he met the Tuskens, Boba Fett was a very lonely character. Which is why I don't think we'll see Tan Wee, because if we saw Tan Wee, then that would almost take away a bit of the loneliness that they're showing us of young Boba. Whereas then he's found his tribe with the Tuskens.
Yeah, I think something Kat said there about, you know, being the father figure to the crime family and stuff. I think one of my favourite lines in this episode was when he tells the Gamorrean god to get the other Gamorrean god to his back that chamber after the fight with Black Krustan. And it's a bit like, yeah, you know, we're not going to let you start like lie there and lick your wounds. Yes, it's my back that chamber, but you need it, so jump in. So it's quite a given moment, I thought.
Yeah, and that also changes the relationship with him and the Gamorrean guards, because let's face it, if that had happened when Jabba was in charge, he would have chucked that Gamorrean guard down with Black Krustan just to finish off the fight and just leave it, you know. He's wounded, you get rid of the wounded. Whereas Boba is more, no, we're all part of the same group. I may be in charge, but we're all part of this. And, you know, like you say, my back to tank is your back to tank. And that, to me, again, shows this, that he's very quick to show the respect. And I think that's shown also earlier in the scene where just after they've captured Black Kirsten, that's the one. When him and Fennec Shand are eating the food, and he's like, I can't eat all this food. And she's like, oh, that's part of the perks of being who you are. But he's not interested in the perks. He's creating the family. And, you know, it is definitely him being the father figure.
Yep, definitely. Kat, any closing thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, I think we've sort of covered everything. I've actually got, just like last week, I've actually got another cool fact. Jason mentioned during the speeder bike chase that the Majordomo drives through a painting. That painting is a printed version of the Ralph McQuarrie throne room concept art for Return of the Jedi.
I thought I recognised it.
That's fantastic. I love that.
But it's not the original. He didn't trash the original. That's safe in the Lucasfilm archives. That's just like a blown up printed version.
Yeah.
It did make me chuckle the way he went through that. And again, it was sort of like almost showing, right, we're destroying what Jabba built.
I also think the comedy, I think, probably was needed after that, the heaviness of that Tusken scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Favreau's just brilliant.
Jason, any closing thoughts from yourself before we wrap it up?
I can't wait till next week's episode and to get the chance to talk about it again. Because I really am enjoying each episode. I'm beginning to feel like I'm enjoying it more than I did with The Mandalorian, but in a different way. I'm like it because obviously with The Mandalorian, it was individual episodes. They were heading there. Whereas this, each chapter is very much part of the same story. It feels like a book. I think we're only going to get one season of The Book of Boba Fett. I think this is a one-shot season. And I've seen rumours. I've got a feeling. I know where it's going after season 3 of Mandalorian. And I actually find that quite exciting. Because it's another favourite character. And I think we're all... It wouldn't...
Want to share details then? Instead of leaving us...
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to get the Book of Bo-Katan. I think we're going to have...
Next year, you think?
I think it'll be... 2023 is going to be... the end of this year, beginning of 2023, is going to be the Mandalorian Season 3. And I think that's going to end with a story that then is going to lead us into the Book of Bo-Katan, which will be then the story. At once, Mando's story with Bo-Katan will come to an end. And also, I think that might link into Ahsoka. And then I think there'll be the Book of Bo-Katan, which will tell her story of how she's coping after the events of everything else. And possibly... her story on Mandalore. So obviously with that in itself, there's a lot of room to bring Temuera Morrison back as either Boba Fett, isn't that? You know, don't get me wrong, I don't think Temuera Morrison's going to be out of a job for a long time. But I do think that the Book of Boba Fett is going to be a one-time story.
What made you think the Book of Bo-Katan? Have you heard rumblings anywhere? Or
I've heard rumblings. And it just, to me, I think it's pretty obvious the way it left the end of Mandalorian Season 3 Mando, there's a lot of stuff needs sorting out with Bo-Katan and Darksaber. There's a lot of story to go there. And I think also we're going to see Mando's story of learning more about the true story of Mandalore, which then I think is going to end with somehow something to do probably still with obviously this whole thing with the building up of what is it they called it? What did the Empire eventually become after the fall of the Emperor?
The First Order.
So they're looking at basically, obviously we've got more of the First Order coming through. I think we're still going to get Moff Gideon. We've got more of his story to come. I think possibly we'll lead into Thrawn appearing, and then that'll lead into the Ahsoka story. Because Ahsoka's coming after.
Getting very far away, yeah. But
I just feel that the next natural one will be Bo-Katan.
So otherwise, like, have you heard those rumblings on the streets are from like credible people?
They're on the streets. It's not nothing credible. I haven't got any deep dark, but it's something that to me. I know they wanted to. I know there's been stories that Katie Sackhoff wanted to do more with the live action version of Bo-Katan, and I just feel that that would fit, and it would give the opportunity to tell a story about Mandalore and the Mandalorians after, you know, almost like the retaking of Mandalore. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yep.
And it fits with me, and I feel comfortable with it heading that way. And I don't want them to burn out the character of Boba Fett, because Boba Fett is a favourite character. You know, what they're doing with him at the moment is brilliant. It's giving the character justice.
Yeah.
But I don't want them to then think, right, we got a cash cow here. Likewise, there's rumours that season 3 is going to be the last one of The Mandalorian. And I'm quite happy with that. If they bookend it perfectly, I'm quite happy to move on to more Star Wars, because there's still plenty of stories to tell.
There is indeed. And with that, Jason, where can the people find you on social media?
You'll be pleased to know, after a panic today, at Hondo Ling is up and running. Changed me mobile and I thought I'd lost it.
There we go. So that's on Twitter, yeah?
Yeah, that's on Twitter.
But on Kat, where can the people find you on social media?
You can find me at Kat Kylo, both with K's, on Twitter. Always happy to talk Star Wars, anything Kylo Ren.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jordy Jedi Pete. You can find the podcast on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok at Star Wars Podcast. And you can find the podcast on Twitter at Boars Star. Thank you very much for joining me, guys. It's always a pleasure, as always.
And you, Pete. And you, Kat.
It's been very fun talking all things Rancor.
Indeed. We finally got a Rancor that's real to talk about, which is all fantastic, you know.
I bet Hasbro are kicking themselves now.
But here's a quick one, and we'll wrap it up, but we'll go to you first, Kat. Do you think they bring that back with like extra add-ons and then get it made because everyone's on Rancors now?
I think if they did it now with Danny Trejo as a Black Series figure with this Rancor, I think it would work now.
Yeah, I think that's the thinking they need, is that, like, you know, what can we give this to get it over the line? Or, you know, the one and only Danny Trejo figure as the Rancor keeper. Yes, that's what we want. That's what we'll give you £300 for, do you know what I mean? Jason, you're going to buy a Rancor if it comes out with Danny Trejo?
I have to admit, with Danny Trejo, could be twisted the arm.
I knew that. Get in. No, definitely. I would I would buy it anyways, you know that. But if you give us Danny Trejo, I might buy three. just to make sure I definitely get over the line. But no, yeah. Cheers, guys. And listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. Stay safe out there. You know, Omicron's running wild. Make sure you're washing your hands. You know, if you want to get vaccinated, get vaccinated. Let's just all look after each other out there, because this wave seems to be here for the foreseeable. But yeah, let's keep each other safe. Let's keep enjoying Star Wars. May the Force be with you all. And remember, always tell that to Kanja Club.
Hello, Star Wars listeners. This is Savannah Odit. You might know me as host of The Dorky Diva Show with my co-host Brian Balance. I am also producer of The Adventures of the Zolan Dart, which is a Star Wars-inspired audio drama that we produced over the last year. If you love stories about smugglers, courage, heroic characters, and maybe a few foes along the way, you should go to thedorkydivashow.com and listen to The Adventures of the Zolan Dart today.
Shout! We've got your pigs.
Were any of the critters harmed?
What did you do now?
I didn't do anything! I just freaked out for no reason!
It was nice doing business with you again. Maybe next time we could deliver something less... temperamental.
Now, what you call temperamental, I call fun.
Hey, is there a place nearby where I can make some repairs?
Three clicks south of here, you'll find a small spaceport. They should have what you need, as long as it's nothing too big.
Dynamic class? My stars, you don't hear about many of those still being spaceworthy.
It's been in my family for a while.
She's pretty great. Any chance you have a hover cart we can use to load up?
I'll check out the holonet to see if anything new has come up in the sector.
My name is Sereth Khon. I am the chief here on Kamai. My people and I have been experiencing food shortages as of late due to unforeseen natural occurrences. We are looking to hire someone.
I say we take this one. The pay is great and it's the type of job we're familiar with.
Welcome, welcome. You must be Captain Otoa. I've already sent word to Pak-2 to expect you in the next cycle or so.
You told him we were coming before we even accepted the job. That's rather presumptuous, isn't it?
Perhaps, though once I received confirmation that you were interested and on your way here, I couldn't help but hope.
Fair enough. Well, we'll be back as soon as we can.
Well, that's not good.
Is that blaster fire I hear?
Ah, so you're the one.
Captain, it sounds like they want to do this the hard way.
I love when they got some fight in them.
This is bad. This is bad. We're about to have a lot of company.
I'll see you soon.